This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, and he joins us pretty much every Monday in the noon hour. Guy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. And before we begin, just congratulations on the great job you guys did in the run-up to the Super Bowl.
Well, thank you, sir. It was a blast. And one thing that I saw behind the scenes is the NFL does not do anything half-hearted. It is full throttle. And it showed throughout the city. And I think, city leaders, everyone involved, business community, and so many volunteers should be incredibly proud of the job that they did. A lot of great corporate partners like your company, Guy, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. And we appreciate the effort of everyone else as well.
Agree completely. It was a wonderful week and a wonderful event.
So, Guy, let's talk about this California insurance crisis. So state regulators Tuesday said that they're going to allow the program, we call it Citizens, they call it FAIR, to collect $1 billion from private insurance companies doing business in California to pay its claims. This is going to send, I think, a rippling effect through the insurance industry, not just in California, but I think folks will be looking inwardly, insurance companies, that is, across this country, and I think it could have a national impact. Your thoughts?
No, I think you're right. And if you remember, we talked about this weeks ago and said the California FAIR plan, because of the way it was designed, did not have adequate reserves or adequate reinsurance. And so it was inevitable they were going to have to look for extra money. Now, when you have a state plan that runs out of money, you can look at making insurance companies pay. You can look at making policyholders pay, or the state itself can pay. They chose to split the excess between insurance companies and policyholders. So, and this may not be the only hit. Right now, it's $1 billion is the targeted amount. Half of it will come from insurance companies and half from policyholders. And, of course, California being California, the citizens' watchdogs are going crazy and saying, well, it's not fair to bail out insurance companies. So, like, these are insurance companies that did not write policies on the houses that burned. You know, making them pay for something they didn't insure is hardly a bailout, and limiting their exposure to half of the cost is pretty extreme, because if you're a company in California, you now realize – even if you're very careful in how you underwrite, you're always going to be on the hook for risk throughout the state. So this is unlikely to make people want to write insurance in California, and the long-term effects are going to be even worse than the short-term effects. But in the short term, policyholders are going to pay about 22% more in policy insurance. Insurance companies will have to pay $500 million. In the meantime, the watchdog groups are complaining. Say, well, we just want somebody to pay other than us, not the state, not the policyholders. Let's just find somebody else that can pay our bills. And it's hard to find people that want to voluntarily pay bills for California.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out because, as you well know, there are some areas of California that are more prone to fires than others. And a number of insurance companies pick their poison, and they don't insure in those high-risk areas, and they insure in, like, more agricultural land and things of that nature, hoping to kind of shield themselves from this. But the way this FAIR plan's working out, they're all participating.
Exactly. And the nature of insurance is an insurance company will analyze the risk and charge customers a rate that makes sense compared to that risk. And it's not like insurance companies have dodged risk for fires. We already have first quarter earnings reports. State Farm paid out over $1 billion, Chubb $1.5 billion, Travelers $1.7 billion, Allstate $1.1 billion, USAA $1 billion. So these are all amounts already paid. And if insurance companies look at California and realize, wait, we can't actually pick our risk. If we go to California, we're going to have to insure the whole state. They are very unlikely to gain new entrants, particularly if they keep policy rates low, which, look, any elected insurance commissioner wants to keep rates low. I understand that. But rates follow risk. And California has wildfire risk. But they also, because of a lot of their regulations, have extremely expensive reconstruction risk. So the inflation in construction has gone on. The stranglehold of regulation makes it difficult to rebuild. So if you insure a house, you have to realize it is going to be more expensive to rebuild it in California than anywhere else in America.
The insurance commissioner there, Ricardo Lara, is now saying as well that local governments are going to have to kind of build back better and smarter to try and reduce this risk, right? So when you think about access to a neighborhood with all the horror stories we're hearing about first responder response, specifically firefighters, their inability to get water to certain areas in a somewhat archaic way, quite frankly, that this is not going to bode well for being insurable in the future, unless they change.
Yeah, and there's some very logical changes, and I think good sense will prevail because ultimately, after trying everything else, people will finally resort to something logical. The houses need to be more fire resistant in these fire prone areas. The brush needs to be cut back. One of the challenges is a lot of these fires started and intensified in parks and in wild areas that the state did not clear or trim. And there are always environmental issues where the environmental groups don't want them to trim the brush. But they're going to have to recognize if you have a neighborhood next to a forest area, you do have to trim the undergrowth and then insist that when people build back, they have fire-resistant roofs, walls, that their landscaping is fire-resistant. And then simple things like requiring when you rebuild that you have a high-volume pump so you can pump water out of the swimming pool and soak the roof and the area. You know, there's a lot of water that never got used. I mean, there were some scary stories. A family stayed and literally jumped in their swimming pool because it was the only thing they could do, and they just poked their head up and looked at the smoke and the flames as it passed over. But that whole swimming pool would have been available to soak the house if they had thought about it and to design something in. And a high-capacity pump is not that expensive as a share of the cost of a home.
So, obviously, this is the first billion. We don't really know where this goes from here. We have some of the same concerns with our Citizens Plan because aren't there a lot of similarities in the way that they're funded and financed?
There are, and, I mean, the people who complain about the Citizens and FAIR plan say, well, insurance companies are getting rid of their worst risk. Well, yeah, of course they are. The things that are most risky, that they can't charge enough to cover the actual risk of either fire, flood, et cetera, companies, if they can't make money writing an insurance policy, won't do it. And there is a reinsurance market. There's one global reinsurance market in London. You can reinsure essentially anything, And if you're allowed to include the cost of reinsurance, then insurance will be available. And it'll be available for essentially any risk. Now, it may be expensive, and you may have to reconsider your design standards in order to reduce that. But if we get rid of the price constraint, because holding down the price is what causes scarcity. If you don't allow an insurance company to charge enough to cover the risk, then they will not insure you. And it's just an economic reality. Nobody likes it. I'm not trying to be a proponent of the insurance companies, but it's a business like any other. And if they can't make money doing it, then they will do it somewhere else.
But doesn't this really beg of, and I've said this time and time again, of local and state government to really get involved with making sure that your building codes lead to a more stable pricing landscape for homeowners insurance? Because I still don't believe, I think we have made some advances, but I don't believe we're there yet.
We're not as close as we should be.
Right. Talk about that, if you would, for a moment.
Yeah. I mean, we've done a little bit of work on the fortified roofs, and that's important because if you have a fortified roof, you're really not likely to have it blow off during a hurricane. And if it doesn't blow off during a hurricane, then your house doesn't get flooded with the driving rain of a hurricane, and your cost is really, really pretty slim. You know, if you think about it, we've been through storms going back to Betsy, Camille, Katrina. Not many houses actually get blown down. I mean, there are a few, and when tornadoes come through, of course there are. But usually the wind is not what knocks down the house. What hurts is a tree falls on the house, so you need to be careful of what you plant around your house, or the roof gets blown off, and then the water ruins everything. So the two things that are fixable. We used to have a house on the North Shore that my mom and dad built, and after Katrina, we cut down the pine trees because those were like big scimitars falling on houses, and had crepe myrtle around the house. Still pretty, still nice, but crepe myrtle's not going to knock down your roof. And so landscaping, fortified roofs, these are things that we can do that will definitely reduce the cost, and that's something that we should mandate in the new code. And then if you really want big trees next to your house, then the premium should be something that reflects the cost of having the big trees.
Yeah, but, you know, the reality is that we all end up paying, right, when there's an exception.
Oh, yeah. And in Louisiana, the FAIR plan, and our citizens plan, rather, falls back on the policyholders and the state of Louisiana. So if there's a disaster, we as taxpayers and ratepayers will end up paying it. So, I mean, it's really the same group. It's us one way or another, either us as ratepayers or us as taxpayers. And, you know, the California solution is, well, let's find somebody out of state that we can send this bill to. But people out of state getting unexpected bills are very unlikely to want to do future business in your state.
What do you think is going to be the potential fallout of what's going on in California? I mean, I think you and I discussed this before. They were talking about the average demolition price of an average size home in the Palisades was going to be $172,000. I've talked to demolition folks here. The average price here is somewhere between $15,000 and $25,000.
Which goes to the point of California creates many of their own problems. They have standards of what you can do with the demolished materials and, you know, how much you have to pay to take them to a landfill. You have standards, all sorts of additional environmental standards and labor regulations that make it very, very expensive. And if you remember after Hurricane Katrina, we just piled all that debris on West End. And it was ugly, it was horrible, but it was an effective, quick way to get the debris removed. So hopefully California will look and say, look, we need to establish a spot, just a temporary spot, then move it quickly to a permanent location and reduce this cost, because there's no magic. That cost is going to have to be paid by the homeowner or by the state of California. And one of the things about the California plan is it maxes out at $3 million. Now, we don't need to be unduly sympathetic to people that have $5 and $6 million homes. But this could be one more push to get those people who are typically big taxpayers to say, you know what, I think I'm going to move. I'm going to get my check. I'm not going to rebuild here. It's going to take too long. The regulations make it very slow to get anything done. And that plus every other aggravation makes me think, you know, it's time for me to move to a lower tax state with less risk. So the consequences could be very severe. And I'm thinking, you know, State Farm canceled 69% of their policies in the Palisades area. They're probably sitting in Bloomington thinking, why didn't we cancel 100? I mean, 69 was a good start, but if we can't get paid for the risk, if we're literally collecting 80 cents on the dollar and paying out 100, something's wrong with this business plan. And I think what it'll do is force a lot of companies out of California.
Well, my big concern is again, I mean, I don't, as you pointed out, our risks are not anywhere near what it is with fire, because we don't tend to lose 3,000 structures, right, that are just completely, totally demolished. I don't know that we've ever had that experience through all of these catastrophic storms that we've had. Even in some total of all of them, I'm not sure that we've lost 3,400 structures in the totality of all of these storms.
I mean, one fortunate thing, California is a very dry area, and so you have droughts that can persist for months, sometimes years. We just don't have that.
It's going to be something that we have to keep our eye on, I think, for sure, as to how this is going to play out. And I'm just very concerned by some of the decisions that are being made out there, that we don't get drawn into this kind of overall expansive approach that these insurance companies and underwriters take as it relates to risk in general.
Oh. No.
Good thought. Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the dangers, you know, it used to be that when California would pass something, that became a template for the rest of the country, because our legislators go to conferences and they talk about what's new, what's happening in your area. And it used to be that California was a leading edge. And so California would pass an EV mandate, and then, you know, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York would pass the same one. So it, as insurance commissioners meet with the California people and look at what they're doing, they could get some bad ideas. And I think the best idea would be a more residual, a stronger house with greater structural integrity built to withstand whatever the risk is, whether it's a flood risk, a tornado risk, or a wildfire risk. And then letting the insurance companies charge a rate that matches what the reinsurance requires. And if it ends up being too high, in a year or two, people will come in and say, we can make money at that rate. But in the short run, the rates are going to have to go up and the building standards are going to have to improve. Unfortunately, I think California is trying to find a way to not change the building standards and also not let rates go up to cover the.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like by a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy!
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Risk.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, let's pivot to CPI report plus the jobs report. What does this mean to the Fed?
Well, essentially what it means is the Fed is on hold, and the Philly Fed president, Patrick Harker, said there's no reason for us to reduce rates anytime soon. Chairman Powell, talking to Congress, said rate cuts will come at the appropriate time, but not in the immediate future. And there's sort of a betting website where you look at the future Fed expectations. And now the Wall Street expectation is only one cut by year end, 25 basis point cut. Fed members in their speeches around the country have said, growth is resilient, production is good, the economy is balanced, and the labor market is balanced. Now, what's interesting is some people overseas who have the liberty to say whatever they want, like L. Aaron at Queen's College in London, said the Fed should actually raise rates right now because the trend is not headed toward two. In fact, it's headed the other way, with rates going back up. Core inflation is 3.3, CPI is 3. We've talked about this phrase, the Fed was surprised, they always are. They expected lower numbers, and they keep telling us, look, it's going to be okay, we're going to get to 2 in a couple of years. Oh, maybe we will, maybe we won't. But right now, both core and CPI headline are up from last month.
And we still don't know, I guess you and I talked about this several times already, the impact of tariffs and what that'll mean?
No, we really don't. That is a very complex situation, and it really depends on who the tariffs are on and how essential the product is. If we're putting a tariff on something that is only produced overseas, and I'll give an important example in the morning, we grow almost no coffee in America. We do a little bit in Hawaii, but it's all overseas. So if we put tariffs on coffee, the coffee sellers and growers know that we're not going to quit drinking coffee in the morning, so they can afford to effectively raise the price. And, you know, we're sort of stuck. Now, things like soft lumber, we grow lots of lumber in the South. Our mills can produce more lumber. So if there's a tariff on lumber, that's not so important, and we can substitute American-based lumber. So if there's a substitute, it doesn't really affect us. If there's not a substitute, then the price will go up. And, I mean, the tariff thing is totally uncertain right now. You know, tariffs have gone on, come off, and I think at the moment they're being used more as a negotiating tack than anything else. I do think it's reasonable to have higher tariffs on China, and the negotiation ought to be, guys, y'all actually need to live up to the agreements that you signed, the free trade agreements that you agreed to voluntarily, and until then we are going to have tariffs. China's in a vulnerable spot right now because they are trying to grow out of a recession, and they're not having much success. They're actually growing slower than we are, and nobody can afford to tell President Xi that. So they're really up against it, and I think we have more leverage now, particularly with China, than we have anywhere else. I'm not sure I would want to pick on China, Canada and Mexico. They're our closest neighbors, and I'd really want to stay close to those guys. It did make the hockey game pretty exciting, though. You know, tensions were high, so you had three fights in about 15 seconds, and U.S. did win, so that was sort of nice. But we really don't want to have that kind of antagonism with our close neighbors.
Guy, has the Fed either directly or indirectly commented on the pace of changes going on relative to governmental policy on so many different fronts? And do you suspect, in your experience, that there's some uneasiness at the Fed?
There is, but one of the things the Fed is very good at is they will not talk about political issues. You know, they say that's up to the legislature, that's up to the president, the Congress and the president have to deal with political issues. Certainly there have been a number of changes in the last 3 weeks, and I'm sure the Fed economists are trying to figure out, because, you know, they do studies, they get reports, but they're monthly, quarterly. There's no way they know the effect of any of these decisions right now. Now, directionally, they probably have a good idea. This is going to help. That's going to hurt. You know, deregulation almost always helps. Some of the tariffs can help. Some can hurt. So that's a mixed bag. Reducing workforce is interesting. You know, a lot of companies on Wall Street have reduced workforce. And, you know, probably the biggest example is when Elon Musk bought what was then called Twitter and cut the workforce by 90%, but was still able to run the business. Now, I don't think the federal government is that inefficient, but I think most people running a business would say, you know, we could cut 10%. That just wouldn't be that awful. Jamie Dimon was talking to his employees and said, look, we need to improve efficiency, and I think, you know, a 10% increase in efficiency is not unreasonable to expect. We can do that. So it's easy to panic about some of the government cutbacks, but it's also rational to think that with good management, you can reduce the workforce and still get the work done, in some cases even better than you do right now with all the people that are on board.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting when you talk about the pace of just being able to put your finger on where the policy is ultimately going to end up. I mean, just in a deregulation sphere, they seem to be going at it, and I don't know if it's good or bad. I really don't know. In a really quick fashion, quick pace. I mean, I do remember deregulation of industries decades ago, it seemed to be, I don't want to say more disciplined, but it was a much more complex, longer, you know, kind of phase out or phase in, however you want to look at it, than what it looks like it's going to be here. And I understand that he's got 4 years, so he doesn't have the benefit of a second term, right?
Well, there's several things going on. If you remember, Jimmy Carter deregulated trucking. It used to be that you had to file your rates with the ICC, and same thing with aviation. The FAA and the Transportation Department were responsible for rates. He deregulated both, and it made both industries much, much more efficient. Now, there was a period of talking and a period of work to get to it. The difference this time is, if you talk to people on the Republican side, they feel like they have 2 years. There's no telling what happens in midterm elections. You know, the House is a very thin majority, and so Republican insiders say anything that is really important, we need to do in the next 2 years. And that really means 18 months, because the last 6 months before election, everyone's involved in elections. So there's a serious rush to do it. There's also a push, and Elon and the Silicon Valley people have that philosophy. Look, go quickly, break things, and then rebuild. If it turns out we broke something we shouldn't have, then we'll rebuild it. But let's go very fast. Let's figure out what works, what doesn't work. So they're bringing that mindset to Washington, and it's never had that. I mean, it's a shock, and it's causing people to, you know, basically spin around. It's like The Exorcist with a head spinning around. People don't know what to do and what to think. You know, the ideas are from mundane to actually pretty good. Let's eliminate daylight savings and just pick one, not switch. I actually like that. I think that's a good idea. Let's quit making the penny. The president directed Treasury, don't make any more pennies. And people will say, that's a crazy idea. President Obama said, I'm not sure why we're making a coin that cost us 3.7 cents to make, and we sell it for a penny. So Trump told his Treasury secretary, don't make any more pennies. Well, that's sort of logical. But yeah, it happens so fast in so many different areas that people's heads literally are spinning.
Yeah, and I just a lot of this, don't know if it's right, don't know if it's wrong, but what I do know, there's anxiety, right?
there absolutely is.
And people are resistant to change for the most part.
And I think one of the things that people have said for years is, we will believe, because both parties, and remember, once upon a time, both parties believed in increasing government efficiency and reducing fraud and waste. And at their heart, I think both still want to do that. But those of us in industry always said, we're going to believe that government has been reduced when home prices in D.C. start to decline. That hasn't happened even yet. Now, in this wave, it may well happen. It could be that in 6 months we look at home prices in the D.C. metro area and say, son of a gun, he laid off enough people that it matters. CFPB effectively has told the workers, stay home, you're on paid leave, don't do anything. So not a bad gig. You can watch cat videos, do whatever you find entertaining, but just don't do anything. And yeah, it does make people wonder what's going on and what's going to happen next.
Yeah. All right, we got to get to a break. When we come back, we'll talk about Amazon Prime subscription fraud, and we'll also talk about Representative Scalise's Super Bowl plan with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Yet another fraud scheme, Amazon Prime subscriptions. Guy, tell us about it.
Yeah, it seems like the crooks must hang out together and have crook conventions. This one is sweeping America. And what they're doing is they're basically looking at any email address they can find. And I got one, so I know it sweeps everybody. It says, your Amazon Prime subscription is going to be canceled today because you didn't renew. Click here. So, sense of urgency. you know, they don't know if you have an Amazon Prime subscription or not, but they want you to think you have to respond. So you click, what's your Amazon Prime subscription? Sign in. Fill that in. Next thing you know, when you've given the crooks the info they need, they are shipping to different drop spots, readily resalable stuff, and they'll hit your credit card as hard as they can. And then when the credit card gets declined, they move on. But they're using basically apartments, abandoned buildings all over America, stuff that can be readily resold. And the people that are receiving the stuff are just mules. They're not the organizers. Their mission is to receive the Amazon package and deliver it to another site, and then it goes, you know, up the chain. And this is sweeping America. So if you get an Amazon Prime message, your subscription's about to be canceled, ignore it. If you think you have an issue, go directly to Amazon from your browser. But for goodness sake, don't click this, because this is a big deal, and it's sort of the scam of the day.
And that holds true with all of these, right? I mean, to make sure, don't click in it. Get out. Go to that that site. Check it on your own. Use your sign in, log in, whatever, and check it out that way.
Exactly. Never click the link on the page. Close. Go to the site itself. If it's financial, go to the bank. Go to your financial institution directly. And you'll almost always find that it's a fraud and somebody trying to trick you. But this one's popular, it's working, and the crooks love it because it's, once again, sort of risk-free. They've got mules picking up the stuff, nobody gets arrested, and they get lots of things that they can resell.
Let's pivot again, Guy. Obviously, on the heels of the huge success that we had in putting on Super Bowl 59, it's really created a lot of chatter, a lot of conversations about the city of New Orleans hosting Super Bowls more frequently.
Yeah. You know, it's wonderful when other people say nice things about you. And, you know, we're used to being beaten down a bit, but the Super Bowl was a tremendous success. So, L.A. Times, New Orleans shows what recovery and resilience looks like. So this is obviously in front of their Super Bowl coming up. NFL reporter Albert Breer, I love his story, said New Orleans has hosted 11 Super Bowls. They should host every Super Bowl from now on.
Wow.
Yahoo News, isn't that great, everyone? I think that may be a bit much. But Yahoo News, tremendous recovery, wonderful ambiance, great food. A lot of tourist cities tolerate tourists. New Orleans embraces them, makes them welcome, and does all they can to show a good time. Steve Scalise suggested maybe we rotate Miami, New Orleans, and Las Vegas every 3 years. The owners and the big corporate entertainers love New Orleans. And one of the reporters that was working this show said, I was able to leave my hotel, walk to the dome, go through security, and be at work in 16 minutes. This never happens at any other venue. And for fans, you know, when the game's over, if you want to commiserate or you want to celebrate, you walk out of the dome and you're just faced with a plethora of options right there within walking distance. So really a great idea. Steve's idea is we should have it every 3 years. I think maybe every five would work if they were asking me, but it's really wonderful. And, you know, New Orleans is, we have a lot of our French approach to things where we do things when we have to. And it's sort of like kids that have a midterm or a final. They'll study when they have to. You know, we fix the city up when we have to. If we had it on a regular basis, I think it might encourage us to do a lot better. And I know in a perfect world, we'd always maintain the city perfectly, but for the Super Bowl, sure stimulated us to better effort. And God bless Michael Hecht for his job working as coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, it was huge. A lot of different organizations coming together, for sure. It's just nice that they're having this chatter. I don't know that the NFL could deliver on that and show that much favoritism. But I think we could get it more frequently, right?
Oh, yeah. Jack Ham from Pittsburgh, one of the famous Iron Curtain offensive linemen, said New Orleans is by far the best city for Super Bowls. He said when we played there, We dropped our bags in the lobby, went to the bar, and we didn't have a curfew. And for a week, we were roaming the city. And after two nights, the captains went to the coach and said, "Coach, we need a curfew. This is killing us." But it didn't kill them that much. They were able to win the game.
Right. We need help, Coach.
Yeah. Yeah, please. Protect us from ourselves. But those were the days when the players were out on the streets just enjoying themselves every night. But literally, the best city to host a Super Bowl. And I know the marketers, you know, the Coca-Colas of the world, the Budweisers, really like New Orleans because their customers want to be at a place where you can walk. And I mean, you could walk to the Dome, you could walk to the Cathedral, you walk to all of the different venues. And it just makes it easy logistically.
No, no doubt for sure. As always, Guy, we truly appreciate your time, your insight. Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Have a great week.
Oh, you too. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. Check in with Scoot to see what he has coming your way. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We covered a lot of territory today. Hope you enjoyed today's show. It's amazing that Mardi Gras right around the corner, right? This is the first big weekend. We just had a great weekend, obviously, with the now Mardi Gras, what, almost three weeks long, quite frankly. So the weather cooperated. Tommy Tucker had Arthur, Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker had Arthur Hardy on earlier this morning, talked about the reports that he had that everything went well, good crowds, and hopefully the weather holds out for this weekend as well. A lot of big parades this weekend. It's getting this weekend's getting bigger and bigger almost every year as we go along. So we look forward to seeing what's going to happen this weekend, and then obviously on to the following weekend. Scoot joins us just talking about Mardi Gras activity. Scoot, what do you have coming up?
Well, you know, there's a lot going on this coming weekend, including the crew of Mad Hatters. And this has just become one huge, giant parade in Jefferson Parish. And, you know, it's family friendly. And Jesus actually leads the parade. It's the first float. It's Jesus. Some people think it's a hippie, but it's really Jesus. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. A lot of bands in that. We'll be talking about that all week. We'll talk about the 50th anniversary of Saturday Night Live last night. What did you think? I'm going to give you my honest opinion of the show, and we've got a little bit of politics to touch on. It's also President's Day, so a lot of people are off, but not everybody is off. So we have a lot coming up on the show this afternoon.
All righty, Scoot's headed your way, folks. Hope you enjoyed today's show, and we'll see you guys again in the morning. Have a great Monday evening.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built. It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.